the ground.
Okay, it is 20 after 6 on February 1st, 2012. This is a recording of the Home Occupation Text Amendment Subcommittee, Subcommittee of the Josephine County Planning Commission. And present today at the meeting, we have Rick Leibowitz, who is representing Small Business Development Center. We have Nancy Hubbard, who is from Nancy's accounting service. We have Nat Chase, our code administrator, Valerie Montague from the planning office, and Dave Wagner, planning director, present. Record should reflect that Ward Ockenden, who's the chair of our subcommittee, and Vivian Kilpatrick Pilger of the planning commission are not present. With that, items to discuss. And I'm going to turn it over to Valerie, who says she did most of this research, and she's just going to walk through other ordinances that we looked at, then maybe the draft home occupation text that we came up with. I can help with that.
Okay.
Then we're going to get on to item C, which is not on the agenda, and that's fees and the supplement that was today approved by the Board of Commissioners. Supplement fees. I'll talk about that.
So, at the last meeting, it was decided that we needed to look at the way home occupations are handled in other jurisdictions. We have an opportunity to not only adjust the... One of the problems is that we have a one-size-fits-all. And regardless of whether you are going to be doing taxes in your office with no employees, or whether or not you are going to try to open an auto body shop in your backyard, you're held to the same level and the same price. So this is an opportunity to look at different levels of review, different levels of fees, in order to make the level of review and the fee fit the type of impact and the type of business that is being proposed. So it was decided that we would look at fairly local jurisdictions, including Grants Pass, Jackson County, and Douglas County. One thing to keep in mind is that Grants Pass is a city, so they are dealing with a much more urban setting. We have other things that we have to consider, such as resource lands that have state laws governing them. So the counties are going to be more aligned with the types of things that we need to keep in mind. But I'm fairly impressed with Grants Pass's structure. I think they've got some real positive things in there. So...
And to add to that, one of the issues that Dave Talley had raised in our last meeting, as you might recall, was the Grants Pass is going through a UGB expansion. And those businesses and those lands that are immediately adjacent to Grants Pass or within that UGB are one day going to be taken into the city. And wouldn't it be nice if they could transition easily without having to go through a new process or maybe having their home occupation be outlawed once they were annexed or be treated as a pre-existing non-conforming use. And so as much as we can, at least recognize what Grants Pass allows and see if there's some connection there.
And I did have a brief exchange with one of the planners over at Grants Pass, and she said basically there's nothing standing right now to say how that changeover would occur when you become part of the UGB and you have a home occupation, that it's something that has to be determined. There'll be some adjustments made with the new expansion of the UGB. There is an intergovernmental agreement that determines these types of things, and that's one of the items that will have to be discussed and determined in that discussion.
And that may be nothing more than this subcommittee recommending something to the Planning Commission, who then recommends it to the Board of Commissioners as part of the intergovernmental agreement, but not necessarily part of the text of the ordinance that we're writing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, the urban growth boundary, is there somewhere to find out where that is currently?
Yes.
We have it in our mapping, so we have an actual boundary that indicates where it is currently. There's a website that the city's maintaining right now that shows where they are at in that process and the proposed expansion areas. I'm not going to tell you that I know exactly where they're at in the process right now. I'm not sure. They're pretty far along, but I don't know if there's been a formal decision made on what they're actually going to bring into the UGB at this point.
Is that something they would have on their website, maybe?
They do, and
I've got some of those materials from their website on my desk. I've got extra copies.
Great.
Now we go through this, I'll run back and grab you a copy.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, so if we start looking at City of Grants Pass, one thing that stands out about their code is that they actually have exemptions. So if you are, say, a contractor and you use your office just to write up your estimates and your bills, to look at your plans and take your phone calls, and all the rest of your work is done off-site, you're basically considered exempt. So that's something that, you know, we can consider as one of our levels that we introduce is, do we want to say that certain conditions exist where we're not going to worry about what these people are doing? One way that we can also consider it is, do we want to look at it and say, we're going to bring them in, we're going to look at what they are doing and kind of have some kind of informal, very inexpensive issuance of maybe not a permit, but just saying you're authorized to do this business as you have told us you are doing it because it meets these conditions. Good luck, good business. They also include a percentage, the maximum percentage of the square footage of the ground floor of the building that can be used for the business. So that's something to consider. It's getting a little technical. I'm not sure what their position is on that, is if it has to do with the fact that the business is supposed to be accessory to the residential use, if it's that consideration, so that a business does not completely dominate a residence. A lot of the rest of it is pretty similar to other jurisdictions. One thing that they look at is they don't like outdoor activities because that can make it to be a lot more obvious as a business in a residential neighborhood and also present impacts that have to be dealt with. So typically a requirement is that the business will be within a dwelling or accessory structure. Family members as resident family members as the employees is pretty typical. Maintaining the character of the neighborhood and the lot. A concern is vehicles. We've all seen, places that have a lot of equipment out front or big trucks. So, that definitely will change the character of a neighborhood pretty quick. Retail sales. Obviously, if you have a lot of things for sale, that creates a lot of foot traffic and deliveries. It's just, one more small piece that you might not always think about, but it's very typical to have only retail sales of those things that are incidental to the type of business. So if you're a hairdresser, you're selling shampoos. If you're a music piano teacher, you're selling sheet music, things like that. Permission from owner required is rental. That's something we don't have in our code currently, but it's, something. When they do the application, they do have to have a either a power of attorney or they have a statement of understanding that has to be signed by the owner of the property. And complies with all environmental performance standards. I'm guessing that the city has the same type of objectives as we do as far as DEQ involvement for any type of hazmat materials.
Storage of vinyls.
Things like that, yes. So they have two different, past the exemptions, they have two different levels of home occupations, each with its own requirements that kind of stack. So anything that's required in the minor, if they can't meet those, then they go to the next set. And so that it's a little bit more expansive, but it goes to a different level of review. So the minor no customers on site, no signs, and no weekly deliveries. Obviously, those three things maintain the character of a residence rather than making it look like a business in any way. It's very minimal impact.
With both the grants pass and your draft proposal, where do bed and breakfasts fall in, or is there a separate classification for bed and breakfast use dealt with in the current code?
In the current code, bed and breakfasts, and one of the things that you don't have in front of you, but I can put it in front of you.
Okay. Thank you.
Is special standards for operation of bed and breakfasts. It's in Article 92, which is where the current home occupation code is. One of the reasons that it has limitations of 5 units is that once you get beyond that, you're not in the residential code anymore, building-wise. You're then in the commercial building code. You're a hotel.
Okay.
You're a motel. You're a hostel. You're some other kind of use, but you're not under the residential code. In terms of home occupations in our current code, okay, I don't have that in front of me now. I'll just give it to you. they're treated as a conditional use, and that is a greater level of review. We'll talk about those levels of review here later. But we haven't quite plugged in particular uses into different types yet. And that particular draft that you saw, I don't recall where home occupation. Part of what we're going to talk about today is impacts and how do those fit with different classification of uses. And then later we've got an exercise to talk about particular uses. Where do you think they fall?
Okay.
And that's...
Okay, but so that's the county's code.
Current.
Does the city, do you know, have anything that?
No, I didn't come across that.
Because the one that, the only, I mean, the city one, like you said, is pretty well thought out of this is what's in, this mm-hmm. is what's out, except for the signage issues. So the minor home occupation, you can't have a sign, but there's no way you could do a bed and breakfast without a small sign.
Well, you wouldn't. That doesn't mean that a sign can't happen in the major. It just can't happen in the
correct.
Minor.
But I wouldn't think of a bed and breakfast like a two-room bed and breakfast is needing a major.
Well, but the way Grants Pass has it set up,
it would be
right because there's no customers allowed.
Right, unless there is a special provision.
Right, and. Being, well, we can get into it a little bit more, too, when you start breaking other impacts down. But one of the things, when you start looking at something as a conditional use permit, one of the things you're considering is the impact of the infrastructure, which is going to include, I mean, people in rural areas, they are very concerned about how much water is being used, how much septic is going to be, you know, is the
right.
septic conducive to what type of activities are taking place in the home. So there's a whole other realm when you start having... people staying over, spending the night. It's a big impact to the infrastructure.
Yeah. Okay. Sheriff Road.
And there's a couple of different ways to slice the pie here. We could keep bed and breakfast as a home occupation. That is how the current county code is structured. But since we're starting from scratch, and you'll hear me say that a lot, we can write this darn thing any way we want.
Right.
And if we say, you know, we're going to call bed and breakfast their own animal. We're not even going to go through this exercise with them. We're going to call a bed and breakfast not a home occupation. That's going to be maybe a separate portion of the code where we treat them entirely differently. We have a few people sleeping in tree houses that are got a bed and breakfast permit. So maybe if the committee wants to go there, we can call them a different animal and say, that's it, we're going to write a bed and breakfast subsection of this code and call them something different and not try to lump them in with the other uses.
Residential tourism lodging.
Yeah, so how it fits in the current code is as a conditional use. I didn't write it into this home occupation draft because I the draft that I gave the commissioners originally was just kind of a bare bones, getting down to that different sizes. Now, what goes into those different categories, that's the nut, that's the question. But I wanted to give them a framework to work within rather than this one-size-fits-all system that we have now. Okay. Go ahead, Doc.
So when we go into the major home occupation requirements, you're going into a full site plan review. It includes neighborhood mediation hearing. You're looking at all the improvements necessary for sidewalks, access, any on-site improvements, and land use conflicts are mitigated through conditions of development, which would be anything that came up with a neighborhood mediation hearing. At this level, it's also considered a type 2 application, and it's reviewed by a hearings officer for a public hearing.
Yeah, public
hearings. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the fee structures for the major home?
I'm not sure if I think we're going to be going over fees. We're going to be going over fees at the end of the meeting.
Okay.
So then with Jackson County, one of the standouts in their code is that they actually have certain types of businesses that are completely prohibited. Mm. And so this is something that we consider doing in our own code. So auto or vehicle oriented, there you go, they're done. You know, we wouldn't entertain them at all if we decided to have a prohibition. Retail sales or services other than by appointment only. So no type of stores where you're just going to have people wandering in at any time. You're having, you know, that's more like a
dog groomer, hairdresser,
accountant, mm-hmm. Right? And no large appliance repair. And I'm guessing this must have something to do with solid waste accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, washers and dryers in your backyard or your neighbor's backyard. Okay, so they have a list of general standards. They're pretty obvious what the purpose is. They have their own fire inspection, which I haven't included in here, but they have requirements. How many vehicles you can have on site. Still trying to have the appearance of residential neighborhood. No electrical or mechanical disturbances to the neighboring. And I thought this was interesting. No fluctuations in line voltage. So, mm-hmm. You know, no mad scientist experiments. No class 1 flammables. Within the structure, no storage, display, activity, or equipment can be outside. And only residents, no outside employees. So they call that a home business or a home occupation. Then, if you go to the next level, they call it a home business, and they define it as more intensive, and that you can have up to 5 employees. So they still want you to have your use with inside. They have certain percentages of what your maximum business area can be within the structure. No interference with existing uses. They do include light fabrication of material. Any stored materials need to be screened or enclosed in a building. Again, no class 1 flammables. They don't want you to construct anything that's not typical of a residential neighborhood. And it looks like what they actually do is have the building official determine what level of alterations has to occur for you even to conduct that business in the existing structures. So they're pretty detailed when it comes to a home business.
Hillary, I've got a question on the, they've got on that sizing not to exceed 3,000, 2,000. Do you know what that's referring to? Is that the overall square footage of the home and buildings, or?
No, I think that's the percentage. So it's either 25% of the total square footage of the home or the structure, not to exceed the 3,000. And I'm sorry, you know, I'm not sure why I have 3,000 or 2,000 square feet, but I do have the I have the rest of the code in here, so I can look that up for you.
But that's total size.
Right.
So 25% or 2,000 feet, whichever is greater, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So they have it broken down into not only the type of application, but they determine that because of the zoning. So if it, whether or not it's in a residential zone or a resource zone, and then the level, whether it's a home occupation or home business. So home occupation in residential zones is a type 1. A home occupation in resource zones is a type 2. A home business, the more intensive type, is a type 3 in residential zones. And in resource zone, it's still considered a type 2. So a type 1 would be a standards only. It's conducted within the planning office only. A type 2 would be noticed to agencies and neighbors. And a type 3 is noticed to agencies and neighbors, but it's considered like more like a full site plan review because it's a more intensive type of development.
So you've kind of got a blend there of process types, and what I read into that is parcel sizes. Because if a home business in a residential zone is a type 3, you're assuming it's on a smaller parcel and your neighbors are closer. If it's a type 2, less of a process, you're assuming it's a bigger parcel. So that's kind of reading between the lines. That's what I see in that.
Yeah.
In that determination. And you might remember, Nancy, we talked about in the last meeting, you know, we can regulate per zone, we can regulate per property size,
right.
We can regulate per business type, or some sort of blend of those things. Like an excavation business is okay in a forest residential zone on a parcel that's a minimum size of 20 acres, but you can't do it on a 2-acre parcel in the rural residential zone, something like that. So think about those kinds of issues, and that's going to kind of blend into this discussion we have later on impacts versus types.
I need a quick lesson on zoning in Oregon compared to other states. So when you say, like I'm used to...
It's harder. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And it's determined by the state, which I can't say most because I don't know that for sure, but...
New Jersey's a home rule state, New York's a home rule state.
Right.
So the municipalities create their own zoning codes. And here it's a statewide zoning code, right?
No.
Oh, it's not?
We create our own zoning codes. We do comprehensive planning. Comprehensive planning is dictated by the state. You have to have a plan. You have to have zones or some mechanism to implement that plan. Zoning is typically what we use.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the zones are dictated in county areas that you will have. You have to designate your resource zones. So when Valerie's talking about resource areas, that's EFU, which you've heard of, and forest zones, all the green stuff on the map up here. And then Justin County chooses to have commercial zones and industrial zones. There are other zones that you can put into your county or into your city that are not dictated by the state, but the ones you have to have are resource zones.
Right. But
and that happens at the county level. You write a UGB, you have annexation. Once you're in the city, as county planners like to say, almost anything goes. But you can write your own zoning code as long as that implements that comprehensive plan. Your comp plan is what gets reviewed by the state periodically.
But in the Jackson County, when they talk about a home use that's in a resource zone, I thought if it's a home, it's automatically zoned residential.
No, it isn't. Homes on resource lands do have to go through a higher level of review, and it's not a guaranteed, yes, you can have a home on resource land. There are certain, when you're on forest land, there's certain conditions that have to be
You can
met.
Have an old farmhouse that you rent or own, and it could be on resource land. A farmer who lives down the road actually hays the field or grows crops or something like that. You want to establish a bike shop. You're a home occupation in a resource zone. Okay.
So Douglas County is actually...
Probably add to that, in that in the resource zones, certain amount of business activity is allowed related to that resource production.
Oh.
Winery.
Value added.
Winery. Prime example.
Okay.
Wineries.
Crop processing.
But same, like if you have a dairy farm, cheese production.
They're all ag related. Mm-hmm. And where home occupations land up in the resource zone is when they're not related to that. Like I said, you've got a farmer growing crops, but you want to run a bike shop.
Okay.
You're the home occupation, he's the resource. Both things taking place on the same parcel.
If you wanted to have a farm stand, you would not be going through the home occupation process.
there's already a set of state regs for that.
Yeah. Well, sorry to open up this can of worms, but do you have issues where someone's in a residential zone, but they do want to do a resource type?
We have allowances for that also.
Okay.
They could sell vegetables out of their garage as a location.
Or firewood if they've got, you know, enough wood on site to accomplish that. So Douglas County is actually handling home occupations more similar to the way we are doing it now, and almost more severely. They put everything through a CUP, conditional use permit. But then they add general standards for home occupations. So a CUP, in general, what you're looking at is that you want to make sure that the permit will not allow any impact to a neighborhood that are not mitigated through conditions of approval. You're looking at making sure that infrastructure is not impacted. You might have some type of requirement for improvements or for any type of impacts that are made that will be corrected as they occur.
The classic conditional use permit is a church and a school in a residential zone. They usually don't get their own zone. Sometimes schools do. If it's a large school campus, it might be zoned something like IP, institutional public, popular zoning designation. In Duskin County, we have schools, we've got one on a resource land, we've got them in residential zones. Most of them are in the city, but not all of them are. What's North Valley? That's in RR5?
I believe so.
RR5 zone.
Yeah.
And Hidden Valley is that?
Hidden Valley is farm.
Right, that's in a farm resource zone. So a conditional use permit is usually, if you think about the way churches might be regulated, what are you going to regulate? Hours of operation, parking minimums, on-street parking, number of connections to a street perhaps. So they're not, you know, one guy can't get out of his driveway when church gets out for, you know, 30 minutes or something, and you want to regulate where those entrances, ingress and egress are. Height of building, shadowing on other properties, church bells, noise, how much noise can they put out, classic one.
Accessory uses,
like weddings, funerals. Jesus Northwest comes to town with 50,000 people and wants to camp in the lawn or something like that. So churches are your classic conditional use permit. And if you think about, or a school, you think, you know, living next to a school could be a good thing, could be not such a good thing, depending upon how that school maybe gets conditioned. So that's background on CUPs. They're relatively intensive and usually involve a conditional public hearing and notice.
So they do add in certain standards to accompany the requirements of the CUP, which are basically straight from the state ORS that's required for the resource zones. So it has to do with the employees being the resident, no more than five, that is operated by the resident or an employee of the resident. No more than five employees, that it's operated within the dwelling or another structure, not interfering with other uses, and then they bring in the total floor area with a percentage again. So
retail sales.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
So basically, Grants Pass has exemptions and two levels of review. Jackson County has prohibitions and two levels of review, and Douglas County, they're all CUPs. The things that they all do have in common are they are all looking at number of employees, visibility as far as the neighborhood is concerned, signs, which definitely is going to make something look like a business, parking, and impact and interference with existing and permitted uses.
Yeah. daycare center, we can have a play area right next to a guy who has to fertilize his field. Right there. So those are the kind of impacts and potential impacts that we have. I wrote had to review an existing home occupation permit one time for a guy who ran a dog training academy on his 2.5-acre parcel. He did a particular kind of dog training called French Ring, and it is a rather intensive obstacle course that German Shepherds, the preferred brands, some Dobermans, but usually German Shepherds, they run through it, they do it through obstacles, they jump through, no kidding, flaming hoops. And at the end of it, they come up to a guy in a bite suit who's shooting a revolver with blanks at them while they're biting the bite suit. The neighborhood went crazy.
I wonder why.
He started off training Rover and ended up with French Ring events that had 150 people in attendance with their dogs. So, anyway, it's all about do you fit and... Yeah, how do we accommodate businesses and residents?
So you brought up child care. Right now, with the home occupancy permits, does that include child care is required to do that, or is there a special provision for that?
It's at a certain level.
Is it four or less?
No, actually, it's a permitted use in residential zoning when it's 13 children or less.
Really? Okay. Most states have a 4 or less. It's funny that they've gone up to 13.
I thought it was changed to 16.
You might be right. It hasn't been changed in our code, but I think that's come up.
Yeah, because I've had that come up in my
And there may be some state permits that you're thinking of, where the state oftentimes has different thresholds that they're requiring licensing requirements. But for the county, we're looking at impacts on the property, so it's a different kind of deal for us.
Like both New York and New Jersey, you're allowed 4 if it's residential. Once you get past 4, then it's considered a commercial daycare facility, and it would either have to be commercially zoned or require a variance.
Conditional use permit or some sort of special use permit.
And is that in New York City proper, or is that state?
No, New York State. I have no idea about New York City. Never linked in the city, but this is like a way rural part of the state.
That's Clark County, Washington.
Normally
work with. I think that was the standard.
Yeah. It was kind of the same things, the same issues, though. You know, it's like 4 student, you know, 4 children. Usually, it's, you know, 2 parents dropping their 2 kids off at this one place, so there's not a lot of vehicle traffic. You have 13 people, mm-hmm. so a lot of vehicle traffic mm-hmm. in the morning and in the afternoon. And
possibly 26 trips a day.
And then also most daycare facilities now, especially in places, beautiful places like Rams Pass, there's a lot of outdoor activity. Mm-hmm. It's much different than when you have 4 or 5 children playing in your backyard and 20 children playing.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on that?
That's pretty much all of it.
Okay.
You're up.
For some reason, I'm like this.
I can't wait to finish this chart.
I did just make copies of that for you, but you can have mine.
I got it.
Yeah. There it is.
1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, just briefly, given the hour, I want to go through what we gave to the commissioners as the home occupation ordinance template. And I'll give a really brief overview on it, and then I want to get to this chart on the wall that Valerie put up, and we'll talk through some of the issues and also structure of the code. So this is going to kind of lead into that discussion. Let's look at those. Purpose statement, purpose of the article to encourage citizens of the county to use their homes to engage in small-scale business ventures. Home occupations are regulated to ensure they don't alter the residential character of the neighborhood, nor infringe upon the rights of nearby residents to peaceful enjoyment of their neighborhood and properties. Not a whole lot different than what our code currently says. This example has exemptions, and I focused on food products grown on the premises, so farm stands or garden stands. People that own maybe a 3-acre parcel could have a pretty substantial garden and sell some things in the front yard. Short-term sales from a residence. When does a garage sale become a secondhand store? That's the question there. If you have 3 garage sales per year, you're probably just cleaning some stuff out of your storage sheds. If you have 12 of them a year, every year, I would bet that you're bringing some stuff onto your site and selling it as a business, not just what we typically think of as a garage sale. So we looked at some thresholds there, and this is a number that was thrown out in another jurisdiction that I worked in.
And on that B short-term, 1 week in duration, I understand, but then you're saying 2-week period in any given calendar. So are you saying 2 1-weeks, or are you saying a 2-week?
According to the interpretation of this, and I was tweaked a little after I originally wrote it, I think, you could do 14 garage sales.
14 days in a year, and perhaps that's it.
But you could have 2 weeks in duration at one time. 1 week and another week, you could space them out. It's just a maximum of 1 week in duration and a maximum of 2 weeks total in a year. You could split that
so
a 14 few different
days
ways.
Yeah, I would just clarify.
You could do a week-long one in May and a week-long one in November.
Okay, 14 days max. I would like to see that clarified by 14 days max per year.
And there's nothing magic about that number.
Okay.
I think 14 is a heck of a lot of garage sales for one property. Whatever number you folks are comfortable with.
I'd say less than 12 because you don't want them to do a once a month.
Right.
Because to me, that's like a regular retail business if you're holding once a month.
Right. Yeah.
But generally, when they do them, they're doing them 2 days at a time.
Right.
So they get that
3.
And you could.
Yeah, so they get that maximum.
You could alter that something like such sales shall not exceed 2 days in duration.
3
consecutive days.
3 is common.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Are we talking consecutive days?
A number X in duration, and a number Y for the number of days for the total.
Yeah. Yeah,
that would be better. Whatever it is, I'm not vested for a particular number. I just want to remind you, there are some numbers and some thresholds in here. Just look at the structure. We're going to fill in numbers later.
Okay.
And you can make notes on this, and we'll have, eventually, when we get down to ordinance language, we're going to nail down some numbers. Because I want to make a recommendation to the commission that these are numbers we think are relative to impacts that are reasonable and strike that balance between commercial business and the residential occupation. A, under general definition criteria, on page 1 of this draft, says home occupations are businesses carried on principally in residential zoned property, clearly incidental and accessory to the use of the property as a dwelling. Do not require substantial off-street parking or upset existing traffic patterns in the neighborhood. When you have a home occupation and you get busy, somebody like Nanette will hear about traffic on the road.
Mm-hmm. And I have.
Oftentimes, these folks are either sharing a private road or a driveway easement or some sort of road maintenance agreement, and that neighbor down the road that drives the road maybe 2 or 3 times a day, he and the wife going to work, maybe the teenage kid going to high school and back, they're making maybe 6 trips total. Now they got a home occupation that's making 50 trips a day. Who should have to pay for that road?
Mm-hmm.
And so, in defining things, I think it's really important to have a good, solid definition that we like that sort of says, this is the problem statement. Here's what we're trying to solve, and here's what we're trying to allow. There's a general reference here to noise ordinances, no exterior remodeling, which makes it not look like a residential structure. Sorry, you can't build a Wendy's and then say you're going to live in it.
I do have an issue with that one, just based on a common client request that we have. I mean, right now there's a lot of home boutique bakeries where they do want to have a separate kitchen built to separate their home kitchen. Mm-hmm. So it's like if they're doing, you know, wholesale cupcakes, mm-hmm. and they're, you know, delivering to a couple bakeries, it really doesn't affect.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interior.
Right. This is
exterior.
This is specific to exterior. So it has to do with the character of the neighborhood.
But in some cases, they might put a little outbuilding for their little bakery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a shed or a garage.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, but if it looks like a shed or a garage and they're doing their cupcakes in there and they are maybe even doing some retail sales or they're shipping out of it, that's one thing. If it looks like France Bakery next door.
Oh, right. No, it's going to look like a home structure.
Right. Well, that's what this is for. It says no exterior remodeling which alters the residential character of the structure. And that, again, remember, that's
okay.
One of those subjective criteria.
Got it.
Because calls where we're, does it look like...
Yep. No, nope,
that picture does look like Woodstock.
I think that's fine as is, though. The way it is.
And something that I read, I don't know which portion. One of them actually even mentioned color. That okay, like our place is all one color, all buildings. So where it was mentioned would indicate to me you can't have the office, for instance, one color and the home another color.
So
it was in this material.
Yeah.
That it was. You know what it probably was? It's probably Grant's Pass.
I
okay.
I didn't remember that one.
It may.
I'll have to find it.
It may.
Okay. Anyway, focus more on structure if you would.
Okay.
So we've got general definition and criteria for the home occupations. Those 4 points are all about giving sort of the initial box that we're going to define. What a home occupation really is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't occupy, in this case, more than 25% of the total floor area. And again, this was written for an urban area. This is the city of Sherwood. We have 4,000 square foot lots in Sherwood. 10th of an acre. There should be no storage and distribution of toxic or flammable materials and spray painting or spray finish operations. Fire marshal, material safety data sheets, toxic stuff. We want to keep it out of the neighborhoods in Sherwood. There may be allowances for that on a 5, 10, 20, 40, 80 acre parcel in Justine County because we got space. And again, sort of that, how do these impacts fit into types of occupation? Do we want to tie into property size? You got a spray paint booth on a 40-acre parcel, you probably not going to impact your neighbor. You have a spray paint booth on a 1-acre parcel, you probably will. And so the first portion of this is, again, just kind of adding to the definition of what a home occupation is and when you're not a home occupation.
Okay.
After that, it goes into type 1s and 2s. And the way this ordinance is structured is that type 1s are exempt from the permitting process and defined by the listed criteria. In other words, if this describes you, they're exempt. Whether we want to register a business, whether we want to say, have a nice day, go away, whether we want to have people fill out a checklist, I mean, there's some administrative tasks that we can talk about later, but for right now, think about, are there levels at which you want to exempt a business entirely, or do you want to permit everything? Type 2s require a permit, and that's the next level. We've got more signage, we've got more customers, we've got
outside materials,
commercial pickup and deliveries. I put one volunteer, one FTE employee who doesn't live at the residence. It's just threw something in. And then each of these, you'll see some notes. And Nancy's going to like type 1. Tax preparers, accountants, consultants, artists, and photographers are type 1. You're exempt. Oh.
I have question marks all over it, but.
Type 2s. I threw in a list of what I think meets these criteria, which would be a hairstylist and music, art, yoga, and cooking class teachers, alternative medical practitioners, dog trainers, small engine appliance repairs, small-scale daycares. These are some things that fit into those categories in the city of Sherwood.
And then type 1s and type 2s have a ceiling, and above that you're a type 3. And then type 3 gets a little more sticky in terms of conditions.
Do you currently have an expiration and revocation of the home occupation in Fortune?
Yes.
Okay.
Don't pay your renewal fee, you expire.
Okay.
Violate the terms of your permit, and I can revoke your permit.
And if the permit's revoked, do you also still currently have that, can't get it again for 12 months?
I don't believe so. We don't think
we
have any type of language.
Sure with that.
I was thinking about your treehouses. If by chance they got revoked.
I was in a good mood until now.
I'm sorry.
That's a whole separate issue.
Yes,
part of the reason that it has that 12-month provision in this code, Sherwood has a provision in their code that if you apply for a permit and that permit gets denied for whatever reason, you can't apply for the same thing for 12 months.
Oh.
Valerie's heard this story before, but I insisted once that a billboard company get the property owner's signature on the application, because if I deny their permit, then this commercial property owner can't apply for his own sign because it runs the land. It doesn't matter who owns the sign. He couldn't apply for his own sign for 12 months, and he was unaware that this application was being filed. They wanted to have an application and a permit in hand and then go to him and work out a lease deal. I wouldn't take the permit. I said, look, if you get denied, he loses the land right, the property right, for a year. I won't take it. And that's, you know, part of the reason that's in there, that 12-month provision. But it doesn't have to be. Typically, what people do is, rather than revoke a permit when faced with a possible revocation, they scale it back to whatever the permit says. And they ask me, well, what if I just go back to what I was originally permitted for? And I said, yeah, that's the point. Go do that.
Yeah.
You know, let go of a couple of your employees and, you know, 2 deliveries a day. Anyway, this is a pretty basic home occupation ordinance here. It doesn't have a lot of detail in it. I'm hoping that we can keep ours fairly simple, but I presented this to the board and I presented it to you just to think about the structure of what different types look like. At that point, and again, this was months ago that I did this, I was trying to convince them that the main issue was getting away from this one-size-fits-all permit and start treating bookkeepers a little different than excavators.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Because I can think, just in that industry, the difference in how they operate. Somebody goes out to everybody, doesn't do anything at their office. Totally different from, I have people coming to the office.
And not only that, it impacts having large equipment parked on your property, even though you might be doing all of your work off-site, having large equipment that you're loading and unloading,
right,
likely at early times in the morning, and you wake up to beep, beep, beep.
Makes that fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a lot different than, you know, a neighbor of yours having to deal with a car coming up and dropping off some paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's the Article 40 ministerial permit? What's that process? You have it for the type 2 home up?
What were you looking at?
Permit procedures for type 2 home occupations. A, an application for type 2 shall be filed according to the application procedures of Article 40 for a ministerial permit.
We talked about this last time in the context of, this won't be real complete, but I'm going to give you a thumbnail sketch of it. Objective standards-based criteria, or standards-based permits are typically done as a ministerial permit. There are no criteria to consider. It's not subjective. That's it. We write a permit because you met the conditions.
Black or white.
So it's an application. You fill it out. It gets approved. There's no 30-day consent of neighbors involved in that process.
No. Ministerial permit is you either meet the standard or you don't.
It's in-house.
I mean, I approve it or I deny it based on what you gave me.
And then the quasi-judicial means that there is notice.
The higher level of review.
Right. Okay. And so quasi-judicial is a term that you'll remember from the last meeting. Ministerial means it's administrative. There's no criteria. I'm not a judge necessarily. I'm checking boxes. You either did or you didn't. You got one employee or you got too many employees. You've got this X many deliveries that make you a ministerial permit or you don't, and you're approved or denied based on that. A quasi-judicial means that either the planning director or the planning commission is sitting as sort of a judge evaluating criteria. What about, have you mitigated your impacts to the neighborhood through your screening and landscaping? Have you, through your hours of operation and sound baffling in your proposed, in your shed that you're going to do machining, are you going to reduce impacts at the property line so I can't hear you? That's more of a judgment call kind of stuff. And that's the difference between a ministerial permit and a quasi-judicial.
But by nature, any time you get the commission involved, there does have to be public hearing and public comment.
Right.
So it's not just...
And we don't send ministerial permits to the planning commission. Again, they have it here.
Right.
Okay. And that's the major difference. But in Josephine County, the way our code is written, the planning director can make quasi-judicial decisions as well, which is very unusual. No one knows. That's why I'm powered.
I'm on the back, so it's okay.
Oh.
It's being recorded. Bauer, you want to walk them through this?
Okay.
You want me to go?
I can do it. So we considered typical impacts of most home occupations that are of concern when you are trying to maintain the character of the neighborhood, the happiness of the neighbors, and then we have looked at, do we want to have some level of exemption where there is a threshold that they have not met, and so we are not concerned about those types of impacts. And then we can look at how many levels do we need in order to do the appropriate level of review, the appropriate fee requirement? And then is there...
And or notice the neighbors as required.
Right. And is there a certain level where someone is proposing something where we're not really going to consider it on a home occupation level anymore? It's going to be considered a CUP. And that means it's going to full site plan review, full public notice, and a hearing. So,
and to add to that, or,
right.
and we made this chart, now we're going to get this chart, big enough that we have boxes from, an exempt could be a type 1, which is how this ordinance is written, or we could have an exemption plus a type 1. We can call them different things. But I think once we get thinking about certain kinds of impacts, what do we want to exempt? Maybe we start blending some of these together, and a 2 and a 3 become a 2 or something, and an exemption becomes a 1, whatever. I also want to think about if there are particular kinds of things where, and not focus so much on the use prohibited, but on the level of impact. 30 deliveries a day or a week is just way too many. Then let's fill in that box with 30 deliveries as being prohibited. Or if we think, that's really going to require a public hearing. There may be some properties that's appropriate, but most of them it won't be. So we'll identify either a CUP, consider that to be a public hearing.
or prohibited for certain thresholds, certain numbers.
So basically, we would be filling this in as we can say none, or we can give it a threshold. We can say no more than. And it's just trying to kind of start grouping things in a way that we can create levels that we can then determine what level of review that's appropriate. So we have number of employees, customers, deliveries, signs, hours of operation, outdoor storage, outdoor activities. And so one thing we have to keep in mind is that there's an ORS existing for resource lands that is going to already make these decisions. They have a maximum number of employees. They don't allow outside activities. So those things...
In resource zones.
So those things we have to... That's a given. We don't have a way around that. That's state determined. We can do the...
For purposes of this exercise, don't worry about that for now.
Right. It's just a layer
I didn't study my thresholds.
percent dwelling or structure to be committed to the business. Do we want to consider that these different levels may be only considered on certain size parcels because of the, I'm trying to mitigate for any impacts. How many vehicles? Hazmat materials. Do you want paint mixing occurring right next door to you? Do you want to smell a sandblaster? Things like that. Do you want to hear somebody drilling into metal? Do you want to hear just someone, a bunch of five different employees in conversation in the shop that's on the property line as they are going through their normal business day? So we can start kind of determining where we're at.
Some of these will be levels on noise. I don't expect you to, come up with decibels.
I don't know my decibels, though.
If you do, that's good. But noise, think about the things that generate noise,
right,
as a more refined way of looking at that. And vehicles, that could be outside storage of vehicles. It could be types of vehicles. It could be a couple of different things.
Okay. And so you're really looking at this to an extent, when we're considering creating levels, it accommodates and benefits someone who's trying to start a business at their home, because then they're not paying $2,000 to do medical billing, alone in their office. However, when we're looking at it this way, it's almost looking at it more from the neighborhood point of view, which is the flip side of this. As much as you want to create a friendly atmosphere for people to be able to conduct business in and to get their business going, you have to consider the impacts of that business to the people who have invested in their homes and expect to live happily.
And one of the reasons for having different thresholds, too, is that you may be perfectly appropriate, in that neighborhood, doing certain things as ones or twos. When we get to three, we bump it up a notch, and that's when we get to go to the neighborhood and ask them what they think. Maybe a type one, if you're even you have a single bulldozer and you put it on a trailer and you go off elsewhere and you do your excavation work and come home at night and you park it. Not a big deal. Maybe we don't need a neighborhood review. You got a 5-acre parcel. You got plenty of room to do it in. You can have your own bulldozer and be none the wiser. Anybody. Now you got five. and maybe we want to bump it up a level. So these things, think about impacts and try to maybe, you have to think of businesses when you think of impacts, but at the same time, think about what levels of permit and permit review and public notice and fee are going to be charged. Another thing that we can think about, even though we're not going to talk about fees in detail until later, Valerie and I were discussing, well, if we had three levels, what would the fee structure look like for those levels? Here's the exempt. You walk in, you fill out your questionnaire, we look at it, oh, you're exempt. We're out the door. Here's number one. We're going to look at you. We're going to write you a permit. That permit gets maybe an annual review, maybe not. But it's
not a big deal. We're going to spend some staff time looking at it. Some are retained, you know, 15, 20 minutes, maybe an hour, looking at it and reviewing it, seeing the neighborhood that you're in. We'll pull up your property in Puma, print out a map, locate where it's at. Oh, there's the building. Yep, got it. Check your site plan, that kind of thing. About an hour's worth of work there. Or so. Type 2, that's probably 3 or 4 hours worth of work for the planning department. That's a little more intensive review. That's looking at the particulars of the building that you're going to house it in, if it's not a residential structure, does it have proper building permits, that kind of thing. Type 3 starts getting much more extensive. So if you thought of those different types in terms of the permit fees, and I know that's on everybody's mind, 2 digits, 3 digits, 4 digits. $50, $500, $2,000, something like that. Don't pay attention to the number. But that's the kind of, as I see it, that's kind of the leaps that we're talking about. So part of identifying the impacts and typing things is for a business, let's face it, most businesses want to go this way.
That's the idea.
They want to grow, they want to expand, and one of these days, they're going to reach this level and they're going to say, now I've got to decide, do I want to go to a commercial zone or an industrial zone? Because part of what we're protecting with the home occupation business is the bleed from commercial industrial zones, because they don't get potential VCs if everyone can do whatever they want at their house. And we have commercial industrial properties that are aching for tenants right now. So in thinking about this, when you come in and you're a 2, and you've grown your business, and you've been at it for 2 or 3 years, you know, you come in for your renewal permit, you look at your checklist, and you go, no, you're a 3 now.
And Nancy's been there.
So does it come
in? Yeah.
Nancy came in for a recent review so she could have more employees.
Right. But that's where I will say in my first comment on this draft is the difference between 2 and 3 is so inconsequential, so that what you were talking about, it's really 2 and 3 could be merged, and then anything beyond that's conditional and use permit.
Or commercial.
Well, and
commercial. Yeah. I mean, really, if you're getting to that level, you shouldn't be doing this in your home anymore.
Right, and there's certain businesses, if it's involving hazmat or a large amount of noise, really shouldn't that be commercial?
Correct.
Because what I really want people to think about with this is, if we set this up, let's not set it up for people to easily violate it. Mm-hmm. And we cannot keep, you know, a check on it and easily enforce things. Where some of these, if they're in commercial zones, other agencies will be able to better,
track them. I kind of get back to the point, you know, what you just said. I mean, I know you said don't hang on to numbers, but if you get into 3 digits of fee structure, at that point, the cost of this is prohibitive. You should be in a commercial area getting a if you're going to invest that amount of money into doing a business, it's either getting a conditional use permit or find a commercial place to do your business.
You know, as we go through this list, and admittedly, we have more categories up here than we may end up with.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. If we find as we go through the issues that there's really a line that kind of goes like this, and hazmat at any level puts you here or here, you know, this is going to, by the time we redraw this chart, it's going to look a lot different. And it may, you know, then we start collecting these under those titles, and I think that we can, your point is well taken. There may be less of a distinction here than we think there is, and maybe those two get lumped together. Maybe
simple and efficient would be good, and
maybe
I really like
this
prohibited
like
and exempt, and then 1 and 2 levels, and then probably commercial.
Right.
You know.
And I think one of the things that we can decide upon is, it's good to go through this exercise. There's a second part of it, by the way, and that's your homework assignment. the first part of it is the exempt in ones, you know, maybe that's the same thing. You know, like I did here, I called a type 1 as exempt. And down here,
maybe these are the exempts and these are the prohibited by impact, by class, or by definition, or by identification. One of the problems with zoning is it's prescriptive. And with new uses, new businesses, new, you know, who the heck ever heard of a paintball course 15 years ago, right? Sporting clays weren't even around 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Google didn't have a huge warehouse full of computers serving a worldwide network. Server farms didn't even have them a few years ago. So if you define things in a zoning ordinance, you can do a dog kennel, you can be an accountant, you can be an excavator, you can be an auto body shop, and if you're not on the list, you're not allowed. That's a problem. That means I'm constantly going back to that code and I'm rewriting it. I'd rather describe them by impacts and levels, and then say if somebody comes in and says, you know, I want to be a pet cemetery. I just look at my impact.
I'm sorry, you're going to get a call about that one.
I haven't heard of that yet.
I look at those thresholds and those levels defined by impact. That's part of the reason I kind of like this system. And I say, okay, you're a type 3.
It's funny you brought that one up, because you will get a call about that one, because I had that one in New York.
Really?
In a service area, yeah, where someone converted their home into a pet cemetery.
Oh, Lord. I had a daughter who likes doing ceremonies, and all the neighborhood kids brought their dead pets and everything to our house, and if anyone ever excavates, they're going to think that we had strange ceremonies.
No, seriously, their argument was that, you know, well, we're just, it's kind of like doing landscaping. You know, like, I'm not really changing the home because I'm doing landscaping. It's just like you don't prohibit someone from putting, you know, stones, decorative stones on their front, so we're putting decorative stones. But the issue was exactly what you're getting to, the number of people that come to that property. Obviously, with a cemetery, there's an expectation of the number of visits.
So, what level do we... not become concerned when it comes to impact? And at what, I think too, one thing that we have to consider is the ease of being able to determine if that is a condition that they are holding to or not. So do we want to set this at a number, or do we want to say no?
No, with customers, I would switch it from customers to exactly what you said earlier, car trips. Vehicle traffic. You know,
something you can count.
Yeah, it's something you can count much easier.
Three customers come in one, car appears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Customer trips, maybe. Just kind of make that a blended thing, whatever we want to call it. Anyway, we're just looking at numbers now, so.
My thought is it's a lot easier for a neighbor to call up and say, I know that they've got someone coming and doing business, rather than saying they've had too many trips this week.
No, I think it gets, you know, it's like if a van pulls up once, and, you know, if I have a party and a van pulls up with a family of five, nobody cares, because then I hit that five threshold with one van. And I think of, I actually have a music instructor who has a home-based business. And one of their things for lessons is they, you know, they get the little, what's it, the Horizon Village. Five people come and they do a little sing-along for an hour and they go back. That's the same, but that's only 1 hour of time.
Right.
So it's going to be one trip. Right.
So at what level are we not concerned? At what level are we going to say they're exempt from our
I'd say two trips per hour. It's coming and going is normal. You know,
That seems excessive to me.
Okay.
But for an exemption. That's what I'm for this level, for exemption.
Right, for an exemption. I really think two trips per hour during normal business hours.
I think zero is what I would say. Because you have to remember there's a lot of shared driveways. And so that's one of the complaints that I get is, you know, three houses on a shared driveway, the one furthest back is the one with the business, and their employees are going back and forth 2-3 times a day, and he consequently doesn't want to pay when there's potholes to be filled, and the other two are really upset about it.
Really?
So, yeah, and they're, you know, it's their road, and they...
Yeah.
You know,
typically,
that's
so you're going to have
minimal
impact. You're talking usually like no customers.
Yeah.
You're doing medical billing.
Throw out some numbers.
No,
we can put more
16.
Than one number up there. That's what's that?
8 hours a day. That would be 16 trips.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, he said 2 trips per hour.
Two times
eight.
Times 8 hours.
Yes.
16.
Normal business hours. Normal
right.
business.
To make 8 customers.
Two trips.
That's 8 customers. 16
so you're
trips.
Talking
one
in
an
hour.
One customer an hour.
Yeah.
Would
okay.
be
all right.
Two trips.
Yeah. All right. I think exempt would be none. You don't have customers. You just have your little.
But you might have somebody come in.
Okay. Going through this, folks. Rick's number is one per.
Yeah, we can put in a number.
That's fine.
We got big boxes.
So one per trip. One customer per hour.
I'm just looking at vehicle trips. I mean, you know, the
mm-hmm.
the business owner themselves counts on that.
Okay.
You know, because when they're doing this, I mean, you know, they have to go run their errands back and forth, and that's what you're talking about. The neighbors are saying they use the road a lot more than I.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's in business and they keep going back and forth to get their own supplies, that's included in that.
Okay. So total trips.
Total trips. Total.
Okay.
Well,
customers.
Right. I'm trying to think of from her perspective and this perspective that she's getting complaints that they're driving too much. And it's like, at what point do we say that, okay,
what's reasonable?
Yeah, you're driving too much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and I think a normal person should be allowed to come and go from their house once an hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, to run errands. You know, whether you have a business or not, and that's why.
Do you know what a typical urban residence generates for trips per day?
Typical?
10.
Really?
10 trips per day.
I'll put 10 up there then. We'll all that too.
Husband and wife go to work.
10 per day.
4 trips right there. Trip out, trip back. Kids go to school, trip out, trip back. There's 6. Go to a grocery store that evening, out, back. There's 8. 10 trips.
And yeah, somebody's not going to work because they're working there.
However,
yeah,
but
you know, typically, that's the IT manual trip generation for a single-family residence. It's 10 trips per day.
Okay. So then, if you're going to keep customers up, I agree with Lynette, 0 on the exempt.
Well, I have trips down here. I just grouped it in one, kind of handling that differently. So I put it down there at trips. 2 per day, or 2 per hour, or 10 per day.
Okay.
Okay.
But Nancy, you got a number?
So are you saying that none of those would be customers?
Right.
Okay. So no customers for exempt.
For exempt.
No employees for exempt.
I believe one employee.
For exempt, I understand where you're coming from there. My concern would be your construction person. He's not going to have a home occupation anyway.
No.
If they had, whoever it is, if they had a bookkeeper come in and work in there, or
you'd have an employee.
Yeah, they could be an employee if the bookkeeper came in.
Okay.
I wouldn't go over 1 on employees. And customers, that 1, are you talking 1 a day, 1 a week, 1 what?
Well, this is for exempt. So we can.
You can define it.
But the one that you have up there.
We're not.
I have 0. I have 0 for customers. For
oh,
example.
That's a 0. Sorry.
That's all right.
Sorry.
Yes.
We may get differing opinions. And
mm-hmm.
I want them all in there. So
yeah.
Make sure the box can fit.
For customers on exempt, I would say 1 a day.
And are we both satisfied on
yeah.
1 or less?
Got a number?
I'm agreeing with 0.
Okay.
And 0 for customers.
And another 0 for customers. How about employees?
0.
Yeah, because I just envision, you know, exempt being, they're very low impact. It's just one person working in his home or her home and doing
medical
that.
Medical billing.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Or
the right. No impact on anybody.
Let's shoot across the exempt level, maybe go through all these. Deliveries. One per day, one per week, one per what?
Well, we can look at this as UPS. We can look at this as a big commercial rig pulling up.
One, I think one per day. I mean, UPS is like you get your mail once a day.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you said here, the three per week.
Okay.
However, I probably would not prohibit it on weekends, but normally they don't make deliveries on weekends.
Sure, UPS. And well, we're going to be looking at hours of business also.
But deliveries can come at any time for your own business.
Did you say three
UPS
per week?
UPS is going to not show
three
up on a Saturday
week. Yes,
because you're
three
not
per week.
Good.
Fine. Remember, one of the things we're considering is that impact to the neighborhood and maintaining
zero.
Residential.
Right, and not inviting customers in.
Rick, that was
zero.
Zero?
Zero,
yeah.
Me too.
Yeah,
no,
I agree.
Yay. Hours.
Regular hours, I would think.
Yeah. Well, see, that's one of the ones where if there's one, I'm the only one with the employee, so if there's one employee, 8 to 6, but if you live there, it's 24 hours.
If you have no employees, and if you have an employee, then 8 to 5 or 8 to 6.
Well, and when you're thinking about when are people trying to enjoy their homes next door to you,
mm-hmm.
I mean, typically they're going to be at work during the week, 8 to 5, something like that. You know, on the weekends is when they're really going to want some peace and quiet, not have to worry about.
Yeah.
And really, that kind of ties in with the noise to me.
Sure.
Because that is a big issue, is I get a lot of complaints with noise going all night.
I don't think we can answer that. I say we table that one right now. Because that one's so many, like you said, it's prescriptive. There's so many what ifs. How do you classify that,
mm-hmm.
whether it's,
because if you're just doing...
But if we're only looking at it...
Yeah, the hours. Because, if it's someone like Nancy who's doing her bookkeeping,
who
and
is?
She turns on her light in her office,
yeah.
and the neighbor calls up and says,
yeah.
well, you said it's 8 to 6, and here's Nancy at 10 o'clock at night with her lights on, and they now have a reason to bring a code enforcement issue against Nancy.
And either the 6 a.m. or the 10 does apply.
Because of the prescriptive nature of what
Yeah, so
well,
I think that depends
the,
on...
One of the things to think about, though, is... Yeah,
it's
I
one
mean,
level.
With this level, maybe ours doesn't mean anything. Maybe it does mean something down here.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine. So put unlimited then for exempt.
Or
because
not
we're not going to control.
Not applicable.
Yeah,
not applicable. That's
so
better, yes.
Zero with a strike through this time.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Outdoor storage, exempt.
Right.
Yes? No?
None.
None.
Okay.
Or activities.
What do you mean when you say outdoor activities?
What do you mean when you say outdoor?
Your training person would have outdoor activities. Is that what you mean?
It could be one thing.
There's a difference between moving something from your car that you picked up for your business and taking it into your office as opposed to actually having someone outside assembling something in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. If it's exempt, shouldn't have it.
None. Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to consider a percentage of the residence or structure that we're going to require?
No.
Sorry.
No.
Lot size.
I don't think so. Yeah, that's
25% shows up as a percentage of the structure in a lot of codes. I think it does because isn't that the IRS level? You get to write off 25%.
No,
that's not.
No, it's based on square footage.
Square footage of actual use. It
yes.
doesn't matter whether it's 25% or not.
So I could use 10 square feet and have 1,500 square feet of the house. And
I think that provision then is. A master bedroom or a second bedroom is typically maybe at most a 0.25% of the house.
Right.
And so maybe that's where they're coming from. Or
but
a garage.
If they're
I think it's trying to keep it accessory to the main
right.
Rock.
Okay.
Right.
Vehicles, no.
So is this vehicles stored outside? Is that what we're talking about?
Or is this parking?
Customers coming in?
I have a category called vehicle.
Because Tristan is...
You guys call it what you want.
So we have Chris over here, and we have customers over here, so... What are we really looking at?
But that's it. See, you know, again, if we're saying, if you're saying there's no customers, there's no vehicles except for your own vehicle.
Right.
So
this could be.
Size of vehicle. Like, can you have a truck, like you said, with a backhoe?
I may have a cherry picker, and that's my business. Yeah. I just drive my cherry picker out to your site, and I go up in my bucket, and I'm a tree surgeon.
If they're going
to I have a cherry picker to do my business, and I drive out to your site and I go up my cherry picker and I cut off your branches and stuff like that, and then I drive my cherry picker home.
I say not applicable on this one.
So we wouldn't have a business oriented vehicle. It would just be a personal vehicle. We're not going to have an ice cream truck project.
I think we're going to have to refine this decide what actually fits
and exists. You're not locked into anything, folks. Just throw some numbers.
Yeah, because we're going to have to know what's really exists.
But my answer is not applicable on this one. So.
Right. I think we don't really want to consider that.
No.
And it shouldn't be any noise if we're not.
No.
Okay. Yeah. First level done. Now, don't forget, too, that we can combine these. A level one could become an exempt.
Correct.
Right.
So...
I'm getting
in the
mood. Let's just go.
Okay, so what's the next level? What is our next level?
Level one. I'm sorry, I wasn't being wise.
What is our next level of impact? What are we willing to allow?
For employees. Mm-hmm. I'd say five.
Let me do a quick recap.
Okay.
Remember the draft ordinance that you read.
Okay.
And in that, a type one was what we're now calling here.
Okay.
So I had some examples of that. Tax preparers, accountants, consultants, artists, photographers. Does that fit that exempt list pretty well?
Yes.
No.
No, because, well...
Nancy's accountant business doesn't.
That's right.
If you have customers on site,
right,
and you could consider.
I'm thinking type one's a step up from this. So can we just fill what our thoughts and no debates? How about that?
Level one. Do we have employees?
Two
would be good.
I'd say one.
So two, one.
Customers. And we could do this also where we don't actually have to have a number. We could say appointment only. You know, so you know you have one person coming in at a time.
I do like that.
So you have like a hairdresser, and she might have a haircut in half an hour and a perm in an hour and a half.
That's the one where, I'm sorry, I think you need to have something prescriptive. So again, from the code enforcement, if a neighbor says what's a reasonable amount of customers, and it kind of gets over to my trips.
I thought you were going to listen to a debate. Give us a number.
Five. How often? A day, a week?
Five per day.
Per day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I can live with that. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, me too. Okay. Delivery.
No, you're right. I'm still one per day on that.
I'm still three a week.
And I don't mind either. I can go either way.
Signs.
12 square feet.
Excuse me? Oh, 12 square feet. I'm sorry. I was thinking big.
3x4.
Yeah, that's fine.
And you had, do you want to put up, because you had in your type 1-6. Do you want to put that up?
He doesn't get a choice right now.
Okay.
The numbers are arbitrary. That's just a draft.
Okay.
Hours.
Not applicable in my opinion.
You don't mind five customers a day? They can come at any time?
11 o'clock at night. And
driving past the bedroom.
Yeah, I'd say 8 to 5.
8 to 5. Nancy? You can take the hours.
Not applicable.
Okay. You could come up with a quiet time at 10.
And then do you think you're 8 to 5, do you have days a week per week? Mm-hmm. Or will you just make, are you only going by time, or are you considering days of the week? Monday through Friday?
So I kind of go that.
I hesitate to see you do it Monday through Friday.
Okay. I'm just saying for Nan's consideration, since she was considering.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, the only thing I'm thinking about is Sundays, because a lot of people, mm-hmm. that's their day off.
They're
on a quiet time. So I would say, you know, Monday through Saturday or something.
No, Sundays. That's good enough.
Yeah, there you go.
Creating blue laws. Go ahead.
Outdoor story.
You know that you can't buy a cardboard or motorcycle in Colorado on a Sunday?
New York, too.
Hmm.
New York and Indiana.
You can buy a bottle of booze now, but you can't buy a cardboard.
Yeah, it's like, where does this make sense? No outdoor storage, as far as I'm concerned.
No.
I'm okay with 25% on that one.
25%. Same, yes.
Ma'am?
That's fine.
Lot size.
I'm an issue with that.
Not applicable.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't matter to me.
Ma'am?
No, I think when we get to the next level, it's going to be.
Yeah, at some point we will, but not yet.
Vehicles?
Vehicles.
This one.
That depends on what it is.
Actually, for both of them, the deliveries, I do think there should be a restriction on the size of delivery trucks that come. Because there is, you know.
Well, they have some bobtails.
So are you thinking UPS only?
How many ton is it that we have already in here?
We say that.
UPS better.
Yeah, if it's more than UPS, then I think there's a...
Over a one-ton or something? Or?
Well, I know, for instance, Staples or one of those companies occasionally will use a bobtail to deliver.
A what?
What I call a bobtail. It's a big truck. It's bigger than UPS, but it's not an 18-wheeler.
Okay. Box truck. Yeah, I'd say 4-ton limit.
What we have now is nothing exceeding 2.5 tons.
Okay.
Put in limit by size.
2.5 tons.
Yeah, 2.5 is good though.
It's what we've been going on.
Just limit by size. Yeah. And vehicles, typically what you're seeing in most home occupations are outside storage vehicles. So you can think about
okay,
that.
Okay, so if we look at it that way.
No more than a single trailer.
Yeah.
One outside vehicle.
I think we're struggling with vehicles.
I can
you can't
that.
Really picture what it is that we're trying to regulate.
I
you want to
that
consider that. Outside storage of vehicles as being that, because that's one of the complaints that NNAC mm-hmm. gets quite a bit. They've got, you know, 10 inoperable vehicles on their site.
Auto repairs are horrible for that.
Yeah.
Horrible.
A lot of these guys seem
well, I
can't
actually,
yeah.
Well, that goes in the prohibited. I kind of agree with the same ones that you, if you want to put the type 1 and 2 prohibited uses, I agree with all four of those. So if you want, just on the record, auto body repair, restoration and painting, commercial auto repair, junk and salvage operations, and storage or sale of fireworks.
See, I think those should be prohibited myself.
Right. I'm
in
agreement on that.
Don't even consider
that.
Those.
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
So
those
what are we doing
commercial.
About vehicles in this first in level one?
1 to 2. That would be your cherry picker guy.
Okay, so business. We're not talking about personal
vehicle.
Or total.
Business
we're talking about
vehicle.
1 to 2 business.
Yeah, we can't really limit the amount of their personal
no, I'm just saying overlap.
License
yeah.
vehicles.
Yeah. Okay, hazmat.
None.
None.
Not at that level. Noise?
None.
None.
Okay. Two down.
Move on. Trips? We doing trips? No. I don't care about that.
Well, it kind of is taken up in the customer
deliveries
and
the customers.
Okay.
Yeah. We may not need that.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, employees. That one.
Type two. I'm up to 5 employees.
I say 3.
I was thinking 3 too.
Okay, customers.
8 per day.
That's 1 an hour. That's not too shabby.
Yeah, I can.
Well, and I say that depending on your hours of operation.
H2 plus 1.
I'm fine, thanks.
Do you care about me?
I just said man.
No, I'm fine. Thanks, Dave. I have to give you a hard time.
For the record, I care about Nan.
Yes, we are being paid.
It's recorded.
Deliveries.
I'm still at one per day.
Yeah. Three per week. I'm still there. That's Nan.
And I think I'm going for a one per day on this.
Okay. And so we're going to consider the size limitation throughout, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Signs.
12 square feet still.
That's fine. Yeah, no need to have anything bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. Hours?
I still say not applicable.
I still say 8 to 5 on Sunday.
Depends on the business, dang it.
Yeah, my final thing is have to be what categories are
we. So it may be that this is a standard that if you don't meet it here, that you're up to the next level of review.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see, I'm having a hard time having even a third step myself.
Okay, so you're at, which one are you at, Nancy?
Give me the 8 to 5 for that level. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Do you know
outdoor storage?
Do you know the square footage size of a typical shed?
So would you want to consider that?
A typical shed?
Yeah.
You want to review
typical shed is around 200 square feet, I think, is what
it's over.
Feet.
So I want to use
200
square feet of footprint. So like if someone has a couple pallets of things that are sitting on the side of their house, I think that's what.
Okay, so you want to consider it by how much?
Yeah, but it's got to be size restricted again to kind of.
Right.
So it's almost
so
like.
By size.
I'm thinking of basically the footprint size of a shed or a wood pile.
200 square feet.
Yeah.
200 square feet is where we start requiring a building permit, too.
Okay.
Those are other thresholds that we'll bring up from time to
time. That's why there's a lot of sheds under 200 square feet.
Okay.
You don't have to get the building permit.
Okay. And one thing to consider, too, is the current code requires any outdoor storage areas have to be screened from site. So that's another, you know, there's ways to mitigate.
Yep.
And you can only have some square footage of.
Anything different for that for you?
That's fine.
Okay, outdoor activities.
No.
Where are you going to get into your business where you have your dog training?
Yeah.
Well, that's a little bit different. That's just a matter of someone walking into your place of business. That's not necessarily someone training the dog outside. So there's two differences there.
Okay, so you're thinking the next one would be.
I think she's talking about training them outside, though.
All,
okay.
Yeah. All dogs
yeah.
are trained outside.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there should be some allowed for
yeah.
this level.
Yeah,
outside.
I think
yeah.
I agree.
Building up a fairground where they train them, where they do a dog training class inside.
Okay.
Some, yeah. I'm not sure how much at this point. Some outdoor activity.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you're none? Nan?
I for some, depending on what we're going to put in the category.
Okay.
Yeah.
Percent of dwelling.
25% still.
That's still fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Is that dwelling and accessory structures?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Dwelling or structure.
Mm-hmm.
Lot size.
I don't think that's important.
Again, I have to know what's going to be in that category.
Okay, Nancy?
Let's go not applicable at this point, you know.
Vehicles.
Same as above.
Okay.
All on the same on that one?
Yeah.
Okay, have that.
I think you could just go
still
down on all of them.
Until you get to CUP, maybe. There's no way we can really regulate that,
yeah.
So I
noise?
Think we shouldn't have it.
Yeah.
Are these dogs barking?
Has that.
They could have some noise at this point, depending on what it is. Do we allow tools? Do we allow dogs? What do we allow?
That's where I do think there's.
Well, when you're going to allow noise, you're going to need to have some hours to go with it.
Right.
Well, there is a noise ordinance, but
okay,
you know,
see,
not easily enforced.
I say it's again prescriptive to the existing noise ordinance on all cases.
it can't be, any of these can't be above and beyond the normal residential noise ordinances.
Well, that's 10
or is that not okay, yeah. Is that not well defined?
It is perfectly defined.
Okay.
There's no definition. I can't make enough noise that causes me to.
The hours are defined.
Make you mad. I think is what it says.
10 to 6.
Something like that.
10 p.m. to 6
p.m. You can't annoy somebody with noise. Between the hours of...
So, okay, I'm sorry, but that brings up the question,
do we
want to use this process to make this prescriptive?
I think it's helpful since we're allowing people to have businesses in a residential area.
The number one complaint you get...
is noise. Noise and...
Unfortunately, the county ordinance that we don't have... good.
Maybe we want to say maybe not the level, but the hours.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, no noise... outside of 8, no additional noise outside of 8 and 5 p.m.
Yeah. Typically what jurisdictions will look at too is perceptible noise at the property line. If I can drive up to your property line and I can hear it, background noise, then you're in violation.
I have complaints that I've dealt with that the people are actually sitting in their home. And there's a distance. What's this property? Probably not quite an acre. And then they have their neighbors. And they were running such a large generator, big commercial generator, that they were having vibrations and the noise. They couldn't watch TV in their homes.
Right.
So, you know, but that was a car... repair,
yeah.
You know, business. So,
and depending on what
some of these businesses, if we don't allow them, we won't have these
motorcycle
issues.
Motorcycle repair. The gal from the police department could hear him over my phone. He's sitting inside my house.
Yeah.
So.
And then
that may be something we want to address. That we say we're going to refer to the noise ordinance, and make a recommendation that the noise ordinance have a little more teeth to it.
I agree, because I think that this just should be throughout. I mean, again, this is residential use.
Why not subject them to the same standard?
Right. The noise shouldn't be any different than any other residential use. There should be no incremental.
If you're going to run a lawnmower on your property, I'm going to hear it at the property line.
Right.
But if you're running a business, you know, you're running your lawnmower for 20 minutes. You don't run it 8 hours a day.
But then again, some of these businesses are doing the same thing, so we don't want to make it more restrictive than what their neighbor's doing.
Right.
So.
We may identify issues that we want to get to, but we don't necessarily have a standard.
Correct.
That's okay at this point.
But I think it's good to bring up.
Right.
Okay, so at this level is where we are likely to start doing public notice. So this is when we're going to bring the neighbors in. What are your complaints? How can we mitigate? The only thing I want to say about that, Nancy, and not that we have to address that here, but on resource properties, so this is residential, on resource properties, they already have a number, which is 5.
Oh, really? Okay, I wondered where that 5 came from.
That's where it came from.
This is where I'll just say my number's going across, or anything above this right now, you're going straight to conditional use permit or commercial.
That's what I agree to.
I want to stop right there. Mm-hmm. I feel we've just done our job. For the simple home use permit, anything above that. I mean,
well,
and
so
I'm,
it,
I'm
so
pro,
you
I'm,
consider
I'm pro
business.
Pushing it. You're pushing
so would
it
this level be considered where we would still do public notice? And would you keep it in-house?
No, I don't think so. My feeling is... you can have up to 5 employees, but as long as it's not making noise or anything like that, there's really nothing different about this. The only thing that's increased in this is the car trips, which is why I put that car trip issue up there. But I don't think 5 employees makes that many car trips.
So what if you have 10 acres, and in the center of that 10 acres, you want to have a cabinet shop? You have to go all the way to 50 feet.
Well, the 5 employees...
if you're going to have more than 5 employees, yes.
And the 5 employees have 2 trips each, right?
What's that?
Yeah, 5 employees, 2 trips each. Okay, so we have 10. And then they have to go to lunch and back, so there's more.
outside of residence, you're going to pack lunch.
Let me reframe this question for you.
You're going to pack lunch and you're in a rural area.
So I think level two should be
there.
So
we're talking about some thresholds here. At a type three, you may not necessarily need to go to a public hearing, which is what we're calling conditional use permit. Maybe this one is just a notice to the neighbors, which is more of a quasi-judicial decision. And then we decide, you know, if we've got five complaints from neighbors that all object, that the business has either mitigated those concerns or they haven't. And in any home occupation permit that we issue, except obviously an exempt level or maybe a type one level, think about who can appeal that decision. And how does that decision get posted? If I'm making a type three, I've noticed the neighbors, let's say, and I've gotten their input. Valerie and I, she's written a staff report, I've reviewed it, I think it's a good decision, I sign it. And as a type three, Nancy, the neighbor, says, I don't think you've mitigated my concerns about deliveries, outdoor activities, and noise. I'm going to appeal this thing to the Board of Commissioners. And then you've got an opportunity. Now you are going to a hearing. And fee for that of some sort. But now we're going to a hearing. Maybe, is there an administrative level where we can make conditional use permit or quasi-judicial kind of decisions based on criteria that don't necessarily go to a public hearing? Part of the reason I ask that is that this gets expensive.
Well, but I'm saying
but my answer is still no. I go back to Valerie's comment. If someone wants to do something, at that point, if you're going to make that level of investment in your business, you might as well just do a conditional use permit right from that point on, or do your business not at a home, but in a commercial district, which is where most people do their businesses.
Okay.
The whole point of this is to get the people registering, in my opinion, I go back to their purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but my point is, I'm above two already. If nothing else, at least by hours. And I have one employee that likes to work on Sunday because her Sabbath is Saturday. Now I have an issue with hours if I'm in number two.
But that you're the one that put that. That's why I put NA. That's why I was thinking ahead.
but then we would be looking at revising what's on two, I think.
It is the purpose of this article to encourage citizens of the county to use their homes to engage in small-scale business ventures.
But that's subjective.
I know, but that's why we make this.
That's what you're defining for small-scale.
Encompassing to small-scale. I look at Nancy's business personally as small-scale.
Okay.
You don't look at your business as small-scale?
No, sir.
Then why aren't you doing business? Why are you doing business at your home instead of in a commercial district?
Number one, because I don't have to pay rent, $1,200 a month, let's say. Number two, if I want to go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock at night, I can.
But to me, that's small scale.
Not with our clientele, it's not.
What do you mean? With
they have a lot of clients.
Are you small scale because your business is small scale or your impact's small scale?
My impact is small scale.
That's what I mean,
small scale.
We're talking about impact.
You don't do...
You have your own driveway. You're not sharing it with anybody.
Right.
You don't have huge
you're
amount
all
of customer
outside.
Traffic.
You don't have outside
okay.
noises.
Okay.
So see, that's why we need to categorize what is it that we're really going to put in those.
Do you infringe on the rights of your neighbors?
No, not that I'm aware of.
So then I say
well,
you're a small
scale. Well, you would have heard by now if you had. So.
Some of them are clients.
They don't dare wish me away.
I see your type of business, and what we may say is that
looking
about.
Through this, and I got news for you, it's probably not the last time we're going to do this, because I think when we get into more issues and start. Especially after your homework exercise for the next 3 weeks, you may want to review this and say, you know, I don't like where those numbers are at.
Yeah.
I want to
Okay. And if we're going to eliminate three, yeah, I agree.
Does maybe, do we see some blending maybe of the first two categories and then an expansion of two?
No, I say the opposite.
Do we draw a hard line?
I say you do the exempt and you blend one and two into what is small scale. You know, what fits your purpose. And I think the goal of one and two is mostly not asking Nancy and I, but asking Nanette what she gets her complaints about. And then...
And that's where we draw the line.
And that's where we draw the line. And then, but then that's where we give input that, is there a situation where we can come up with a mitigation where Nancy and I, as business people, say, but can't we make allowances for this?
Mm-hmm.
Because you are going to get complaints from people that just like to complain. Like the same person that says, oh, they're making way too much. I kind of go to my William White book. The people that say the noise ordinance with the decibels, and they talk about going by that fountain because it's so peaceful and that fountain has a higher decibel level than a freight train, you know. It's the same thing. Someone's like, oh, that's so noisy, yet their lawnmower has twice the decibel level of that person's generator.
Right.
And they're running their lawnmower every day, and that person's running their generator once a week. You know, those are the issues we want to kind of sort out of this, in my opinion.
So, where do we want to... We're at 8 o'clock.
Where's our homework assignment?
And I'm going
to... Let me email to you.
Okay.
Okay.
Do we want to wrap this, or do you want to, Nancy, you got other thoughts?
Oh, my thought was, can you email us that, too?
Yeah, we'll put that together.
Put it on an Excel or something.
Sure.
Or,
okay.
Morgan and Vivian will want to have some say in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they'll get it as well.
Okay. When can they be looking for an email?
Two more things.
Yeah.
Pretty quick. Next week.
Yeah. Okay,
good. Really. Two things I want to do real quick, and I'll tell you what your homework assignment is, even though we haven't got it pulled together yet. Real quickly, I'm going to read all the home occupations that we have open in Angeles City and County.
How you do
currently permit? There's 78. There's only 78 with permits. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. I'm going to rattle them off. And I'm not going to give scale or anything like that. But auto repair, furniture building, wholesale distribution, antique store, carburetor repair service, dog grooming, auto parts dealer, excavation, wildlife sanctuary, herbalist, cabinet shop, insulation, auto repair, massage therapist, machine shop, welding and fabrication, bed and breakfast, tree service, internet sales, weddings and receptions, specialty auto assembly, excavation, kennel, bed and breakfast, storm windows, auto dealer, bed and breakfast, auto dealer, accounting and bookkeeping, here's Nancy Hubbard, auto dealer and chiropractic service.
That's an interesting combination.
Isn't it now?
Yeah. What's the name on that one?
And what's the issue there? Two home businesses on the same property. We'll get to that later. Machine finishing, small arms cartridges assembly, wildfire dispatch center, portable water service, bed and breakfast, hair salon, plumbing contractor, woodworking and apprenticeship program, bakery, auto dealer, cabinet shop, bakery, roofing contractor, garage doors, wholesale distribution, auto dealer, ceramics, welding and machining, river guide, medical equipment service, auto repair, travel trailer rentals and sales, seamstress, auto body welding and towing, nutritional consultant, bed and breakfast, plumbing contractor, administrative office support, hair salon, reforestation business, audio and video recording service, landscaping, carpet and window cleaning service, cabinet shop, medical practice, tree service, excavation, auto repair, landscape supplies, bed and breakfast, auto accounting and bookkeeping, ceramics, landscaping, weddings and receptions, aircraft communications, accounting, bookkeeping again, forest management service, and another bakery.
Interesting.
Here's going to be your homework assignment. We're going to email you this. Think about what those types are. Then we're going to email you
this list and probably add a few.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, we're going to give it to you in a probably an Excel spreadsheet or Word document, which works best.
Excel.
Excel.
Yeah.
Okay. Then account Excel. And then I want you to put in exempt, type 1, type 2, or you.
Okay.
Let's agree. Do we want to call it CUP?
Mm-hmm.
Be the final category. So we're going to have those categories. And then per use, you've already thought about impact that those things might have. Now we got to say to the guy that comes in and says, I want to be a tree service, what type of home occupation permit do I need?
Mm-hmm.
So here's a way of looking at the use. We talked about impacts, now we're going to talk about the use itself. From the business owner perspective, what makes sense?
That's easy.
And is that a $50 permit or let's say exempt or registration?
Nope, there's a price with
that.
There's a price with that.
I think that?
Yeah.
Anyway, so small price. Medium price of some sort,
mm-hmm.
and a big price.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, with those kind of issues in the back of your mind, we're going to ask you, is it exempt? Is it a type 1, a type 2, or a CUP?
A list in my head.
And
I believe you did.
We'll give that to you in an Excel document. You fill it in, and then we're going to kind of cross-reference it against this. And then, of course, the next thing is going to be impact-wise, how do those two lists kind of match up?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be the homework assignment. That one's actually kind of easy. So.
Sounds like fun.
Glass of wine, you can sit down and do that in an evening. Real quickly, what I wanted to hand out are the planning fee comparisons.
Okay.
And you can just take this home, I think. Just get after 8 and let you go.
Okay.
You mentioned two businesses, one property. Briefly mentioned. Is that not allowed currently?
We have it permitted in one case.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a rather unique way of addressing that that Valerie's been teasing me about all day.
Remember, you're being recorded.
Queen.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I was looking at the 1, 2, 3 as a methodology.
Uh-huh.
And what I was doing was going to take these numbers and add them up. And let's say this is we're now going to call this. If you have a business on your property in the resource zones, your permit types cannot exceed 5. If you have multiple businesses on your property in the residential zones, your permit types cannot exceed 2. You could have 2 type 1 businesses operating. You could have 1 type 2 business operating. So if we went to a numerical system, a 1, a 2, and a 3, exempt, what is now a 1 becomes a 2, what is now is a 2 is a 3, and then CUP is a 4, that's a way to review two businesses on one property. You could outright prohibit it. We could say, if you're going to have 2 businesses, you've established 1, now you want to add a 2nd, we're going to bump it up to the next level. So if it would normally qualify as a 2, a 1, now it's got to be a 2. Or it could go the other way. If you already have a 1 on your property, you want to bring in a 2nd business that would normally be a 2, you're going to be limited to the same standards as a 1. Different ways to look at it. But it's an issue that probably will come up.
Oh, yeah.
So if you've got...
I know when you're going to be facing.
Okay.
So I just marry an attorney who's going to open up a...
Don't go
to
mechanic.
I think we're all done. We're all adjourned the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.